Mini episode 116 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 116 and another edition of the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider. Taking the program, as we always do when we touch on fantasy sports, to areas of the unusual, whether we're covering mainstream fantasy sports or the niche ones. What we're doing today is going to double, essentially, as a straight preview and also showing you out there how to do it with a fantasy twist, how to set up a pool with your friends for the Triple Crown. It's become an annual staple on this show. We have, for the first time on this program, both of our horse racing in-house experts on at the same time. The last couple of years we've done this, we've had good friend Bob Glassman on with us. I believe last year he and good friend in the media, Jody McDonald, good friend of our program, were on for that one. But this year we're able to pair up for the first time. We got both of our guys in the same place at the same time. Bob Glassman and Steve Callis, two longtime FDH Lounge dignitaries, also members of the 21st Century Media Alliance. Bob through a couple of new ventures that he is launching, and Steve through his continuing work at stevekallas.com. You can check him out, Steve, K-A-L-L-A-S.com, for all of his great columns that he's been doing just recently, and we repurposed something from him yesterday, a great column on Andy Pettit and how the testimony in the Roger Clemens perjury trial appears to have backfired for the prosecution. Great analysis by Steve, and there's a link in the column about how he actually called that last July. We have a link to his original column on that. So it's great to get both of these guys on the show, both of whom, again, I personally have broadcast with many times, and great to be able to get them both on here. It's Bob Glassman and Steve Callis, both of our FDH Lounge dignitary in-house horse racing authorities. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Good to have you guys both on.
Good to be with you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick. Good as always.
It's a true pleasure to be able to do this with you guys here. Just to briefly recap how we did this last year, the setup for this, and this is our recommended setup for anybody out there that's getting together to do this with their friends before the first of the three Triple Crown races this weekend, the Kentucky Derby. Essentially, the way it works is for any horses in your stable, we're going to do a three-round quick little mock draft here, serpentine style. It's 15 points for any horse that wins, 10 points for place, three, and 5 points for show. 15, 10, and 5 on that, and that holds true for all three of the races in the Triple Crown. We've never had any ties on our system in the years we've done it. Essentially, if there are any ties, it's broken by the horse either wins by the most or a horse that is the closest to the front of the pack if none of the horses in first place have ended up winning any races. Traditionally, the way that this has gone, because it's kind of hard to forecast the fields for the Preakness and the Belmont at this stage, essentially whoever does best in the Kentucky Derby, if any of the four of us doing this have a horse that's win, place, or show, chances are the best of our horses is going to win the overall competition. When I speak of four of us, I will also be picking off a list today for FDH Lounge Dignitary, our senior producer of the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Servillo. I did a draw for position before we came on the air here. Steve Callis draws the first pick, I, Rick Morris, second, Bob Glassman, third, Steve Servillo, fourth. So in a standard three-round serpentine draft, it'll be Steve, me, Bob, and Mr. Servillo. Second round, Servillo, Bob, me, Steve Callis. Third round, Steve Callis, me, Bob, and Steve Servillo in that order. So, guys, any notes here before Mr. Callis gets us started with the first selection here? Any overall thoughts on this year's Derby?
Well, Rick, it's Bob. I think they're pretty much all the same when you get a 20-horse field. We'll probably say this every year, the last number. there's a tremendous amount of luck involved, and you just play the horses. If you're playing the ponies, you just play it as you would if to have fun and not so much a game of skill as far as the Derby goes.
It is the one day of the year where Joe Public's weighing in the most, certainly. Steve, any thoughts on this from your end? Any overall thoughts before you make the first pick?
No, I agree with what Bob said, essentially, except to me you can eliminate 10 or 12 horses out of this right up. This is not, yes, there are a lot of horses who can win, but this is not, in my view, a wide-open race in terms of anyone, mind that bird, 50-to-1 shots. I think it can be narrowed down this year, and I guess from our selections, we'll find out pretty quickly what everyone else thinks.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm sure that we will, and this format actually sets up nicely for us here as we go through the 12 horses that we're going to pick. It's a chance for both of you guys to speak a little on these horses here, and then when we get to the end point, any of them that we didn't touch on that we probably should. Again, there are a couple that come to mind immediately, Bob. I'm sorry, Steve, you're up first. When it comes to the lineage of some of the horses involved here, the presence of trainers such as Bob Baffert, who has one of the horses that's the highest rated in the Derby this year. But which direction are you going in to start this?
Well, since it's against my religion to bet the favorite, I'll just put that out there right up front. I'm going to start off my selection, not with Union Rags, not with Bodemeister, but I'm going to pick number 15, Gemologist. And I think Gemologist, it's interesting to me, he reminds me, not in the way he races, but he reminds me a little of Barbaro. Everyone now knows the legendary story of Barbaro, but if you go back to 2006, and I was fortunate back then to be on the air at ESPN, and I like Barbaro, but he had a couple of things historically against him. But as you know, Rick, and I'm sure Bob knows, he was undefeated, and that was almost overlooked as he won for fun and paid $14 before the tragedy happened. Here's another horse to me who, at least from an undefeated perspective, has kind of been overlooked. He's got all the connections, Castellano, arguably the best jock in the country right now, Todd Pletcher, of course, getting off the schneid a couple of years ago to win his Derby. So I like Gemologist. I thought he was very game in the Wood Memorial. Now, people knock the time of the Wood Memorial. I'm a New York guy. Obviously, I watch the Wood and all these other races. But I'm not as afraid of the time as everyone else seems to be, and here's why. They went the first quarter in that race in 23 flat, and Gemologist went out for the lead. And despite that and being wide the whole first turn, he not only was able to win the race, he was able to hold off a fast-closing Alpha, who's a pretty good horse in his own right. So I think the 15, I had hoped he would be a little more inside. Todd Pletcher seemed happy with it, so that's okay with me. I'm sure you guys know there are only 14 horses in the first gate at Churchill, and then 15 through 20 are in the auxiliary gate, and that leaves you a little space. I'm not a big fan of liking horses in the auxiliary gate, but there is a space between 14 and 15, which gives you less of a chance to be bumped in the early going and can give a jock like Castellano a chance to get out of there a little bit and then settle his horse in mid-pack. So I like Gemologist. I think he has tactical speed, and that is in addition to luck, as Bob mentioned correctly. I think you could use some tactical speed, and Gemologist has it. So I think the connections are great. Windstar Farm, a great owner. Castellano, a great jock. Pletcher, a great trainer with an undefeated horse. So I'll pick number 15, Gemologist.
Great analysis to start. And, Bob, for your thoughts on that, I can only think the one thing I like to underline on what Steve just said, a horse that's a local, a horse that's done well at this track previously. So that's one more element to add to it. What are your thoughts on that one, Bob?
My thoughts are firstly of Steve, just as eloquent and intellectual regarding racing as one can be. I would lobby any time for him to take over a spot on TVG, especially from Gino, who makes me want to turn off racing at any course. But I think what Steve really said a lot, but the one thing that he said, which is very true in a race that's going to have some pace, is going out the first panels in 23 flat. That's a lot of speed in a long race, and, you know, he's able to hang in there, and a good choice. We will not take Steve at his word, not taking the morning line favorite, that he doesn't know what he's doing, because he does.
Well, yeah, that was a very good pick there. And, again, you know, in looking at this, I wish I could say the same as far as not wanting to gravitate for an obvious favorite here. But I'm going to go with Hansen. for the second pick. I'm liking, among other things here, the fact that in spot 14 from some of the analysis that I've read, that's thought to be fairly ideal, I guess, for him, and as far as being able to make that break coming down the back stretch here, if not sooner. So start with that. Steve, your thoughts on Hanson?
I'm not a big Hanson fan. I know everybody said he's got the 14. He's outside the speed. But I thought in the bluegrass, you know, he should have been a little better. It is a mile and an eighth. As you know, he has to go another eighth of a mile. Can he win? Absolutely. Is he a top contender? Absolutely. But I just think for me, and this is just me, I know you have to be on or near the lead pretty much at the top of the stretch at the Derby. Rarely do you have horses coming from way back. But Hanson, to me, since he got run over by, I've now been told, I was watching some of the NBC Sports Channel coverage, it's not Doolahan, apparently it's Dullahan, that's the correct pronunciation. They're apparently calling Ireland to find out the correct pronunciation. But Dullahan roared through the stretch to beat Hanson. So to me, that's kind of a bad mark for Hanson. Do I think he can win? Absolutely. Would I bet him, or do I like him in a fantasy pick? For me, I wouldn't have picked him in the first round. By the time we get to my next pick, Rick, had he been available, I might have picked him, but that would be at the eighth point by then.
Okay. All right. So we can sound the Price is Right tuba on my pick here. Bob, what are your thoughts on Hanson?
Rick, I agree with Steve. I think that'll get overtaken. May have some early speed. Horses that do as he did as a two-year-old, I generally don't like as much coming back as a three-year-old. And I just don't think he's the horse for the course. Not a bad post position. Might have taken him in the late second or early third round.
Hey, Rick, okay. If Hanson wins, you can have us both on next week and you can laugh at us publicly.
Well, I am I'm certainly the novice of the three of us here. I don't make any pretensions otherwise. So this is very good analysis. And, again, just the kind of good hardcore horse racing talk I was looking for out of this crew. So that brings us third pick, first round. You are on the clock, Mr. Glassman, with Hanson off the board, who you clearly weren't going to take anyways, and Gemologist gone. What's the highest available one on your board?
Well, Rick, for the first time in the number of years we've been doing this, I'm going to get my first pick, which it assures me that I'll lose as badly as I did in the past years. I am going to go with Union Rags. I just like the way the horse looks. I like the fact that he didn't win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. There just doesn't seem to be a good mark for that, although that's purely speculative. I like the way he came back in the Fountain of Youth, and I liked his Florida Derby. I know he tired, was overtaken, but I didn't think he was used up, and I've seen horses sometimes in the prep when they're trying to get their graded earnings up really use themselves up a little bit before time, and I just like the looks of the horse, and am a fan of Union Rags, and Michael Matt's a very good trainer, and Le Perru, a good boy on him.
Well, what's very interesting about this pick, and especially from a fantasy point of view, and I guess it's the kind of thing that would make it a very attractive play on at least a show basis, this is a horse that's so consistently is in the money here. It looks like almost a gimme to get your points to some degree. Steve, your thoughts on Union Rag?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on Union Rags, but I'll keep it brief. It was between Gemologist and Union Rags for me as well. I totally agree with Bob on the whole losing the BC Juvenile last year. You probably don't know this, Rick, but I'm sure Bob does. Only one in the history of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, only one winner. That's the two-year-old championship at the end of their two-year-old year. Only Street Sense won that race and came back to win the Derby. So I know what Bob is saying. Also, I just happened to watch that race again today just because I was trying to go back between Union Rags and Gemologist, and he was monstrous in defeat. You know, you hear this sometimes and people don't understand it. Sometimes horses in defeat are even better than when they win, and I thought that was the case. That was his last race as a two-year-old. This year, He was obviously monstrous in the Fountain of Youth. His Florida Derby, I'm on the fence. I got to tell you, I watched it three or four times, and Julian Leperoux, the jock and a very good jock, took the blame. But personally, I thought he had some room around that last turn. He did have to decide whether to go inside or outside. In mid-stretch, frankly, I thought he could have split horses and at least been second, if not got the win. He decided to go way outside. I think maybe he's still a little green. But having said all that, had he won that race, you wouldn't have who's the 4-1 favorite, who's the 9-2 second favorite. He would have been like, I'm guessing 2-1 had he won, maybe lower, had he won the Florida Derby. So obviously I think it's a great selection. I almost picked him, but again, it's against my religion to pick the horses who are going to be favorites. I thought he would be more. I didn't even think he'd be second favorite off his last race, but I think it goes back to what Bob was saying. The horse clearly has a lot of class. He clearly, in my view, even though Hanson beat him in the juvenile last year, was the best two-year-old. And again, had he won, he would have been the overwhelming favorite in this race.
Yeah, a very strong horse, to be sure. Got obviously a couple of the big boys off the board here as it's time for Steve Cervillo, the FDH New York Bureau, to make his picks. Going off of a list that was submitted to me, his pick at the end of the first round and his pick at the beginning of the second round, Bodemeister and Take Charge Indy. So, Bob, I'll start with you. Thoughts on the two horses Mr. Cervillo just took?
Well, Steve got into, I think having the fourth pick and having Bodemeister is a good, you know, that's, I don't think that could have been expected. Obviously ran a monster race the last time out, is seems to be training well, seems to have taken the Churchill Downs well. Steve can answer more to his ability to run on the surface, and Steve can maybe address that for a lot of horses in case in terms of bias, whether they run good on natural turf or synthetics. And I think he's got a good choice with Bodemeister. Sort of you can't go wrong in a race that you can go wrong often.
Yeah, he did win the Arkansas Derby by 9.5. I guess my concern, and this is the new biggest handicapping fill-in-the-blank problem, I guess, of the last few years, these synthetic tracks. I don't like horses coming off synthetic to race on dirt, but, you know, it's been proven in the past that you can come off synthetic and win. Bodemeister, for me, again, hard for me to like speed in the Derby, especially when there's a lot of it, but he did win the Arkansas Derby by 9.5 lengths. He did get Mike Smith for the first time. I will point out one thing that's still important to me nowadays, Bob, and I assume it is to you as well, but it's kind of been lost in the shuffle over the last, I'll say, 10 or 15 years, and that's the weight. Obviously, all the three-year-olds carry 126 pounds for the first time in the Derby, but you'll notice, if you look at the weights that these horses will be carrying, for example, Hanson, a good example, your pick, Rick, he carried 123 his last start in the Bluegrass, and usually what happens is there's always going to be a two or three or four pound pickup, but in terms of picking Bodemeister, I would point out that he has never, well, this year in his last race that he won for fun, he only carried 118 pounds. And to pick up 8 pounds and, again, go that extra eighth of a mile, although obviously he won for fun the other day, again, he certainly can win, but I would point to the weight as a possible factor. You just never know. But, again, this isn't a 1 or 2 pound differential. This is an 8 pound differential, although I will point out he did carry 121 pounds a couple of times as a two-year-old. So he has been up to 121, but I think it's a big jump, Bob, from 118 or even 121 to 126, where you have a lot of other horses, including, for example, Gemologist, a horse that I like, who carried 123 in their last start. But, you know, that's not talked about as much as it used to be in the old days.
And also, Steve, not a real experienced horse, too. So your point about putting on a number of pounds in this position even rings more true.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I should point out, because I did know this. It's been 130 years since a horse who hasn't raced as a two-year-old has won the Derby, and Bodemeister did not race as a two-year-old. That's what a lot of the old, you know, in the last few years, a lot of those things have come and gone. Hasn't raced within 6 weeks of the Derby, that's come and gone. Just things of that nature. But Bodemeister, has not did not race as a two-year-old, and I can tell you only because I'm a Greek that the last horse to win the Derby who didn't race as a two-year-old was a horse called Apollo, and that was 130 years ago. So, again, depending, I don't know what people put in that or not, you know, if he wins for fun, obviously it's meaningless. If he stops, they'll go, oh, he didn't race as a two-year-old, but you can debate that till the cows come home.
Yeah, it becomes one of those old chestnuts if he ends up winning the race and something that he triumphed in spite of, I suppose. Get some notes here from you guys. I guess we'll start with you, Steve, on Mr. Cervello taking Take Charge Indy with his second pick.
Well, I'm kind of sad. I was hoping to sneak in with Take Charge Indy because now I didn't realize I'd be first and eighth. So I really, although I got my pick in there. But Take Charge Indy you like for a number of reasons. Of course, he went down the road in the Florida Derby. He has Calvin Burrell, who has become arguably the most famous jockey in the world the last 5 years. He's won three of the last five derbies. But I'm sure Bob knows his nickname, Calvin Bo-Rail, R-A-I-L, because what he does essentially is he goes to the rail. He's got more guts than any rider I've ever seen in terms of going up the rail or splitting horses. And he is the greatest proponent, I would say, of the shortest distance between two points is a straight line or around the turn close to the rail. So I think this is a very good pick myself. And had he been available, he might have been my next pick.
Steve,
he's just going to go to the rail, I think, and Calvin Burrell is going to try and work his magic.
Steve, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the question ask you while you're talking about Burrell on the rail is, it seems like from the three hole that he'll get the rail, get the lead. Do you think he'll be able to determine some of the fractions, or you know, how do you see him trying to impose his will on the race?
I think he's going to want to get to the rail and let these other three. Horses, I mean, we've already spoken about a couple of them. The wacky speed in the race to me is this Trinneberg, who has never raced more than seven furlongs, is essentially a go-for-the-lead horse. I'm not even sure why he's in, just my opinion. But also Hansen's going. Also Bodemeister's going. So I think Burrell's plan is going to be to get around the one and the two, get to the rail, not necessarily blast out of there and sting these other horses, but just do what Calvin does. You know, if he had the 15 or the 16, he'd have to, you know, take the tuck 18th. And I know he's won derbies from 18th on the rail, like Mind That Bird, for example. But I think he's not going to try and dominate the early going. I think he's just going to try and get around the one and the two and then go down to the rail and see what happens.
Okay.
One last question, Steve. Do you think his previous race at Churchill in the Breeders' Cup did that say anything about him liking the track or not? Or just
hard for me to say because again, he did have the one, and I always, no matter what the track is, if you have the rail, to me that's a negative. He now has had a big jockey change. It was not a good race, but it looks to me this year, and I'm not saying it was just the jockey change, but it looks to me like he's just a much better horse this year than he was last year. If you look at his buyers, and I look at buyers, they're not the be-all and end-all for me, but I do look at them. All his buyers as a two-year-old were actually in the high 70s or low 80s, and already this year his first two, and obviously the three-year-olds get better, but his buyers are 95 and 96, which are not great. But they're not bad in terms of having a guy like Calvin Burrell go down to the rail in the early going, sit and maybe make, you know, that one charge between horses in the stretch. I think he's a live long shot myself, and I don't take much away from Churchill Downs, but, you know, it's a good point. If he doesn't do well, you could say, oh, he was terrible at Churchill. As you know, Bob, I love the game because there's 486 excuses you can make after they lose.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we've all gone through a good chunk of them at one time or another. Bob, you got the second pick here in the second round. Who's highest on your board at the moment?
Okay, well, I'm going to make an analogy to hopefully not a similar one, and maybe in two ways, to the resident brain trust of the Browns, which Lord knows means my horses probably won't even finish. But as the Browns took, and he's not that much, maybe that much of a long shot, as the Browns took the John Hughes, a woebegone defensive tackle from University of Cincinnati in the third round that the Bearcats publication had him going in the sixth or seventh. I'm going to go the way that Steve knows we do in racetrack lore, and I was driving to Pittsburgh on the day of the Florida Derby, and I heard about a former owner of a winning horse, Bruce Zolden from Team Valor, and he owns a local company, Phantom Fireworks. And as I was driving, listening about Phantom Fireworks, I look up and I see a billboard for Phantom Fireworks. And his horse in this race, not a long shot, but one of the ones I think Steve would say is one of the 10 to 12 that has a shot, went the day well. And I got a good trainer that I really like in Graham Motion. And to me, you can't go wrong with Johnny V. And that's the shot, a little bit of a shot that I'm going to take coming back in the second round. I have no doubt that he'd probably be available in the third round, but if I'm ever going to emulate the Browns, let it be on the Fantasy Kentucky Derby draft and not in life, not in anything.
Yeah.
I'll stop.
Fan, I'll echo that. Steve, your thoughts on what today, Will?
Well, I think it's a live pick. Obviously, he won the Spiral with his, Johnny Velasquez, one of the best jocks in America. He rode him for the first time in the Spiral, and he won. These are the connections of Animal Kingdom, trainer, jockey, who won the Derby last year. So I think it's a live long shot. He's on my list. I'm hoping, I guess only Rick is left, I'm hoping that Rick doesn't pick the horse that I like next on my list, but we're now already at the best available athlete, I guess. If we're going to do NFL analogies, I think we're at the best available athlete at this stage where we've already picked six horses. But, yeah, I think Went the Day Well is absolutely one of those horses who can win. And I saw an interview with Graham Motion, and they said they intentionally did the same thing, they weren't thinking of doing, but they wound up doing exactly the same path that they did with Animal Kingdom, who won the Spiral before he won the Derby as well. So, yeah, I think that's a good pick and a live long shot.
Well, before I make my pick, I'll let you guess, I'll offer a thought from you, Steve, as far as what your criteria is going to be. This will help us gauge whether or not my pick is going to snake you. I'm looking at a horse primarily, I think, for his closing ability. Is the horse that you're hoping drops to you one that you think could be a strong closer in the race?
I do have a couple, and I think I would, yes, I would categorize him as a closer, I would.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll get your thoughts on my pick here, leading with whether or not I snaked you. My horse is Dullahan.
You did not snake me, but I certainly think he is a live long shot again. He stormed home to win for fun. I actually just saw an interview with his trainer who said he's been training great. I think there is, and Bob, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think there is a problem with him coming off. I think he's one of those polytrack horses, because I think I heard the trainer talk about that and say essentially, you know, he's already won a couple of grade one stakes, I think, and the track's not the thing. Now, I don't agree with that, but if I had a horse coming off synthetic, I would say the exact same thing. But he was very good. He did beat Hansen, who I do believe is a contender. Again, I don't like him, but he certainly is a contender and a very good horse. And he stormed home in that race in the Bluegrass. So do I think he has a chance? Yes. I'm still concerned about coming from the synthetics to the dirt. That's becoming, to me, a gigantic handicapping tool. But you just don't know. They can be good on both. You just don't know.
Okay. Bob, what are your thoughts on the horse?
Well, I like the jockey-trainer combination. Dale Roman's a very apt trainer, knows the Churchill Downs tack very well. Kent DeSormo, a three-time winner. I like him. I like the horse. I probably give a little bit too much bias when I look at the replays of the race to see if the horse was urged along at a rate greater than what I think he can do in the next race, i.e. maybe took a little bit too much out of the horse. And I get that sense a little bit with Dullahan, which probably means he'll win by three in driving, but...
Well, he also has a top jock. I know you mentioned the connections. Kent DeSormo has three derbies already, looking for a fourth. Certainly, I think he's, again, we've talked about, at least in my opinion, 8 or 10 horses that can win this race, and certainly Dullahan is one of them.
Well, we're getting pretty thin down that list here, definitely. As we end up the second round, and start the third round here. Steve, what are your final two picks here in the proceedings?
I do actually have two picks left, pretty much. So you guys got most of my stuff off the board, but certainly the first pick I'm going to take is Creative Cause, who just got beat a nose in the Santa Anita Derby. I thought he raced really well. Joel Rosario is a top jockey. He won the San Felipe in his prior start. He is one of those California horses who comes to the Derby. I'm not a big fan of those, maybe because I'm from New York, but obviously California horses can and have won the Derby. So I do kind of like him. When you were talking about closers, he is not the closer that Dullahan is, but he is a horse who can kind of lay off the pace a little. And again, with the eight, he should be able to at least pick where he wants to be. As Bob says, when you're in the middle of that pack of 20 horses, you do need luck. You hope you don't get bumped or shut off or clip heels or any one of, again, 50 reasons. But I will take Creative Cause as my pick in the second round. If you guys want to comment on that, and then I'll give you my pick in the third round.
I don't really have any thoughts beyond that. Bob, what do you think?
Well, as Steve knows, we all have racetrack junkies, buddies that we call, and in this case, sometimes we don't call because we only get losers, and I have a good buddy that's known as the Doctor, lives in San Diego, hangs out at Del Mar, and is obviously a lover of Creative Cause. I don't think West Coast horses, West Coast-based horses have done well in the past few years, because Doc has not given me any winners, and he's always on West Coast horses. But again, that's just an angle. That's a horse racing angle. Creative Cause at this point has as good a chance as anybody. And, I thought his race in the Santa Anita Derby was good. As Steve said, has tactical speed. Certainly doesn't have to be on the lead. I'd say if he's back more than four or five lengths at any point, I don't care for the horse.
Okay. What's your first pick in the third round, Steve?
My first pick in the third round is number 10, Daddy Knows Best.
Oh, you snaked me.
That was my plan, Rick. That was my, well, actually, I'm doing this partly on a jockey change. I think Julian Leperu is an excellent jockey, and obviously he's riding what may be the favorite in Union Reg, certainly one of the favorites, but he had to pick one. I'm sure he picked the right one in terms of talent as between the two, but now Daddy Knows Best, leaving from the 10, gets Garrett Gomez for the first time, and boy, I think that's, you know, I think Gomez is a Hall of Fame jockey. So he won up in Canada with Leperu in his last start. He's got a very good record. He carried 122 pounds, which I'm good with. If you're 122 or 123, you're not going to be 124 or 125 before carrying 126 in the Derby. I get a little nervous when you get below that, but he did carry. He got a triple-digit buyer, which, again, is not the be-all or end-all for me, but certainly means something. But, you know, he has a higher buyer than Gemologist, so I'm picking Gemologist to win the whole thing. So I like Daddy Knows Best, and I think he's a strong third-round pick.
That's his value, as we like to say, at FantasyDraftHelp.com. No question about it. Bob, give us your thoughts on the horse, please.
Well, again, often seeing the name, not necessarily in top grade one races, but seeing Steve Asmussen, a wonderful trainer, has a way of getting horses prepped at the right time. Horses that come from, as we know, horses that have come from the Sunland route, not always that bad. Steve can fix my mind with.
I think
the
Mine
horse.
That Bird won the same.
Mine
race.
That Bird. That's who. And Garrett Gomez, an underrated jockey the last few years, but he has a tremendous hunger, and if his hunger can translate into a way to get his horse there, a good pick.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And like I said, I got snaked, so I'll be interested to see you guys' reaction to my pick here, because this is me having to scramble. My pick is one that probably would fare better in terms of if you just want to chuck down a few bones at the track because of the odds that it's likely to go off that day. This game that we've got here doesn't give you extra credit for longer odd horses. It's just whether or not they make it into the money. But I got a feeling that this one could sneak in perhaps. I'm going to go with done talking for mine. Start with you, Steve. Your thoughts on that one there with the horse that I got relegated to after I got snaked on the previous pick?
Well, done talking did win his last race, the Illinois Derby. It is a grade three, however. I can't tell you I've even watched many of his races, but he does have a bullet workout on April 20th. I don't know Russell that well, his jockey. So I don't really have a lot to say about him other than he is the Illinois Derby winner, and he did carry 122 pounds for the first time, up from 117 his prior start. So again, to me, that's one of the things that I look at that a lot of people don't look at. So I do like that factor. He also came from out of it, so if the speed sets up certainly the way I think it's going to set up, that is, I think the first half is going to be pretty fast, he will be one of those horses who'll be coming late. You know, and I think you don't know how good these horses are till you drop them in that place. But he'll be coming with a horse like Dullahan. And just my opinion, if Dullahan and Done Talking are flying through the stretch, I'm picking Dullahan. But I do think it's a good long shot pick. And again, since we've already picked nine horses, this is the 10th one picked. I think that's fine because you'll get some real value there.
Okay, good, good. Glad to hear that. I'm encouraged. Bob, do you have any similarly encouraging words for me?
Pretty much. If I want to be encouraging, I'll say that I'm done talking about done talking. I don't like his background too much. I think coming through, as Steve said, Hawthorne in the Illinois Derby, not the classic way, but you know what, as Steve said before, there's always new angles, new ways, and old ones getting in and out. But I would like to ask Steve a question, something that I did research that 3-4 years ago, this method of choosing horses was at the top of its game until the streak got broke once or twice. But Steve, have you seen the dosage index at all?
You know, it's funny you said that. I was thinking about that today because you were right. 5, 7, 8 years ago, it was the Bible. And I have not even seen, and this is just generally reading the New York papers, normally you'd have the double dosage index horses, and I have not seen one of those this year. And frankly, because of what you said, the last few years, it's kind of been thrown out the window. I don't even, if we were doing this 7, 8 years ago, that would be one of the things I would be referencing. But I can't even tell you that I've seen it this year, Bob, because I think everybody pretty much now has gone away from it because, frankly, it just hasn't been successful.
And, okay. I think at some point, you know, with computerization and with the way that you see on any sort of ball game, just a weird statistic that you know somebody got from filling in 50 fields and what pops up, at some point there'll probably be a new angle created, whether it's based on breeding or something that will get hot for a while. But the dosage did have it for a while, and as Steve said, for years, probably 5, 6 years ago, going back 4 or 5 years previous to that, it had won all but one or two and really was a predominant figure that you'd look anywhere. And as Steve said, you know, when you're looking at the Post, the Daily News, New York Times, Newsday, you get such superior coverage of racing as we do to what we do in Cleveland. Not that you can't see it on the Internet, but it's good just to have it natively available.
Sure. Great question. Glad we got to investigate that angle. We got about 6 minutes remaining here, and we have two picks to go. You got the first of them, Bob.
Alpha. And,
okay.
I've said it before, but I like his connections. I like Karen McLaughlin training. Alan Garcia is a good jockey. And I've always been a big fan of racing of the Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum. Looking for a winner, usually can get has good bred horses. Like the race he came off in the Wood Memorial, nothing spectacular, but he did finish second, and that's who my pick will be.
Okay. All right, Steve, what are your thoughts on Alpha?
Well, I thought Alpha raced real well in the Wood Memorial, and again, we're down to the third round. That's the 12th horse picked. I think he's certainly on my list of horses who can win, but in my view, he should have gone by Gemologist, who had lots of excuses in a relatively slow time. But again, I'll point out things like he carried 123 pounds for the first time, raced really well, started from the rail, which, even to me at Aqueduct, to win the Wood from the rail is would be a really good accomplishment. And he certainly was coming very quickly, very late. But again, to me, when he got to Gemologist, Gemologist showed what I think was real gameness in turning him back because Jamal just left in that first quarter of 23 seconds. So, yeah, I think this is a good pick because the horse who beat him and just beat him by a little bit is my pick to win the whole thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, what better criteria than that, especially, again, if you're looking at the 11th horse going off the board here. The 12th horse and final one, Steve Cirillo, off of his list, at a time when there will not be another pick in the draft, his pick is I'll Have Another. So that's what we ironically end the draft on. So I'll start with you, Bob. Your thoughts on Steve's final pick.
On I'll Have Another. Again, a West Coast horse, shows good speed. Don't have much to say. Do like Doug O'Neill. I don't know the boy Gutierrez. I knew Ricky Gutierrez and a few others, but don't know Mario. And I'll leave it up to Steve to finish it up.
I just know a little about Mario Gutierrez. He was kind of an unknown. Actually, I think came down from Canada. Was fortunate to get the mount when somebody else, I don't know if it was Julian Leperoux or Joel Rosario, who had ridden him before, but they couldn't make it. He filled in. He won a grade two at Santa Anita at 40-1. And then Doug O'Neill decided to stick with him, and then he won the Santa Anita Derby. So he certainly merits a chance. The 19 for me is like a death hole, and I don't want to hear about, oh, you know, they can come from the back, so the 19 or the 20 is okay. You know, they were talking to Baffert, and they were trying to say, well, Liaison has the 20, but he's a closer, so it doesn't really matter. I think that's absurd. So, again, I think a good pick for where we are, and had he been inside 8, 9, 10, 11, I think he'd have a chance to be on the board. But I just, this is a storybook story with this kid, the jockey, who has very few wins. Nobody even knew him 6 months ago. And I'm talking about Santa Anita. I'm not talking about guys like me in New York. So, yeah, I think it's a good pick given where we are. But for me, he would have had to have been much further inside and gotten every piece of luck in the world to actually win the Derby.
I would being the leading jockey at Hastings doesn't having your tack hanging there doesn't necessarily make you.
Yeah, but this horse might make him somebody now, because certainly the two rides, and I went back and watched the obviously I saw the Santa Anita Derby, but I even went back and watched the other grade two that he had won there, and he looks, you know, he looks like he's got some good nerves, and he's a young kid, and certainly this is going to help him. He's got one in the Derby, and he's very young, and you know, now he's getting more well known.
And I was going to say, Steve, it might he might not have his tack there for very long.
Well, we'll see. But you're right. If he wins this race, he will, though.
Well, the thing I think we can agree on here, I think we would have a consensus in our tiny, finite moments left together here, is that the win, place, and show, I would think we would all be certain would come out of the 12 horses we've talked about thus far. Again, this isn't a field that runs 20 deep as far as, I guess they rarely are, but more so than a lot of other years. It does seem a little more limited in that sense as far as horses that could have the capacity to do that. But, again, I just want to say I had very high hopes coming into this thing, first time we put our two horse racing authorities together here, and it actually exceeded my expectations. You guys should both be very proud, because this was a phenomenal segment. I would say to any other media entity out there, top this.
Well, Rick, I think Bob great. And I are hoping you're going to send a CD of this to, like, TVG or somewhere so they can really see what's going on out here.
That's where we belong. We've had enough of Rich Perloff, enough of the Sarge. We're ready.
You know what? It's such a darn shame that the sport has fallen on hard times. But I think, again, we certainly could justify doing this more often. I'm not waiting until next year's Triple Crown to put you two guys back together. Even if we do a little bit of State of the Sport, Breeders' Cup, whatever the case is going to be, we got to find a reason to do this again, because this was just, like I said, beyond what I thought it was going to be, and I thought it was going to be great. So,
Rick, I know we're running
so
short
much.
On time, but I just want to say, pick out any $2,500 claimer. It's fine by me.
Yeah.
And I'm with him. You'll have to send me the program, but I'm with him on that. But I was going to say, if one of us, and if one of us doesn't pick the winner, then we should all retire. But if one of us picks the winner, we should just come back for the Preakness.
Yeah. Hey, that, and anything that would be an excuse to do this again. I'm feeling pretty hyped right now after doing this segment. Like I said, I can't thank you guys enough. That was tremendous. God bless, and we'll convene again sometime soon.
Okay. Good to be with you, Bob. Good to be with you, Rick.
Likewise, Steve. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you both, my friends, and thank you all for tuning in for mini episode 116 of the FDH Lounge.